Kai Wanju, and welcome to All Things Queer, your weekly radio show covering queer news and culture from a local perspective, broadcast live from the city of Borloo, Perth, on Whadjuk Noongar land. My name is Rosie Thompson. Thank you as always to Fiona for another killer edition of On The Record. You can restream On The Record by visiting the RTRFM website or join us live Monday to Thursday, 9 to 11. If you want to reach out, you can send me an SMS on 0405 921 921 or email studio@rtrfm.com.au. Coming up on today's program, we have some really great interviews. I'm so excited for you guys to hear them. Our very own Sam England had a chat with WA cricket star Piper Cleary about the upcoming Perth Scorchers inaugural Pride match. We'll also be hearing Sam sit down with Australian music legend Darren Hayes about his new album, Homosexual.
Piper Cleary, thank you so much for joining us here on All Things Queer.
Thank you very much for having me. Great to be on.
So the Big Bash season has just kicked off. Are you excited cricket's back?
Yeah, super excited. We had two games on the weekend over in Sydney. So we just got back yesterday and I think everyone's looking forward to getting amongst the sun here in Perth this weekend.
Awesome. So the first ever Pride match for WA cricket and BBL is happening this weekend. How does it feel for you to have your team, the Perth Scorchers, and the WA Cricket Association make space for diversity and inclusion like this?
Yeah, it's really exciting. This is obviously something that the Perth Scorchers have kind of taken off ourselves and gone to do, and both our men's and women's program kind of just discussing, like, with the commercial team, things that we can do to just kind of promote inclusivity in cricket and what we can do. So for our first ever Pride match on Sunday, it's going to be awesome. Hopefully heaps of fans get down there and we can just, show that cricket is a sport for everyone and just have a lot of fun and the crowd gets involved and hopefully it's just going to be an awesome day.
Yeah, and so you're 26 years old now and you've been playing since you were a teenager. How have you seen the cricket space change over that time for queer players?
Oh, huge. I think this is something probably like women's teams have generally done better anyway.
Absolutely.
Obviously that's evolved over time, but I think in particular like our men's program, they're an awesome bunch of guys and they're really invested in this space as well and they want to make a difference. And just the whole organisation in general, to be honest, at the WACA is a real inclusive place. And we do a lot of education sessions with everyone in the room. So we're all on the same page. And I think the WACA is kind of leading the way in this space.
Yeah, so that kind of was going to be my next question, you know, how women in sport have always been a bit more progressive for, like, inclusion and diversity. Just wanted to hear a bit more about the response from the men's side. But, it's fantastic, as you're saying.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I suppose because women are much more, because there is generally more gay players. Like we've kind of spoken about, there is obviously a lot of gay male sports people out there, but they haven't felt safe enough to come out. We're kind of seeing that a little bit more, but that still obviously has a long way to go. And I think just doing things like this, like the Pride Round and just education sessions and talking about it, will hopefully in the next kind of 10 years, we'll see the progression of that and more males will be able to come out and be accepted in a sports area. And then obviously that goes onto the workplace and things like that.
Absolutely. And so the Scorchers, from what I've been told, is that they've also been involving themselves in more kind of educational sessions for the staff and players about inclusivity and diversity. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we've done a few sessions and we've got two ambassadors, Pride ambassadors, so one on the female team, and then one on the male side. So it's Tilly Carmichael and AJ Tai, and they're kind of driving this space for all of us players with the commercial team. And, you know, they've got staff members involved as well, and they kind of bring us together, and we get to ask, it's kind of questions like, you know, what you can't ask, right? We're asking them, and we're getting all these answers back from you know, people at the WACA and other organisations that have actually come in and given us these education sessions. So it's been awesome. I think everyone's buying into it. You know, we all feel very accepted at the WACA generally. So I think hopefully we can show that on Sunday and then on going into future years.
The match is happening this Sunday. It's the first one that they've ever done. And we'll be continuing in the future, which is super exciting. But how can people get involved?
Yeah, I think obviously come on down on Sunday. We've already been talking about all the things that we're going to be wearing. I think they're giving out pins, headbands, flags, ribbons, everything that you can probably think of they're going to have down there. So, yeah, get on down, show your support. I think there's going to be loads of like activities and games going on at the WACA. So, yeah, I think all the players are going to buy into it, have all the colours going on. So anyone in Perth, I think, that's not doing anything, get down and come enjoy the day.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Piper Cleary, thank you so much for talking with us today on All Things Queer, and good luck for this Sunday.
Thank you very much.
Darren, thank you so much for joining us here today.
It's great to be on.
When you first started making music all those years ago as Savage Garden, the world was such a different place for gay people, especially gay people in the music industry. Could you have ever imagined you would be headlining an event such as World Pride and debuting an album called Homosexual?
No, because honestly, back then I was married to a woman and I was so confused about my sexuality. Listen, I'm 50, so people can't see right now, but I'm talking to a very young, beautiful, you know, person, and he's talking to a very older gay person. But here's the deal.
I'll start.
I was 10 years of age, okay, when AIDS first became part of the consciousness of the world. And I knew that I liked boys. There's a song on my new album about this. It's a song called Music Video, right? But I was just told by all of my peers, by everyone I knew, whether consciously or subconsciously, that there was something really wrong with me. You know, I was spanked by a school principal. If I ever used the pronoun, like if I ever said like, I think he's cute or something, someone would correct me. And I learned very early that there was something about me that was unlovable, unlikable, repulsive. And so I sort of parked that away in the back of my mind. And then HIV arrived, and it was as though just through the thought crime of thinking a boy was cute, I thought I was going to die. So you can imagine that by the time I get into high school and stuff, as children often do, you know, I was called gay before I even knew what gay was. And I didn't think I knew anybody who was gay. Of course I did. But, you know, there were no role models. There were no pop stars. By the time I was listening to music, I was a huge fan of George Michael, Wham. I had no idea George was gay. Now from space, you can see that George Michael is gay. Was gay, but I was so naive and I didn't know. And then, you know, I had a very violent childhood. My father was the first person to ever call me the F word. It was such a horrific, violent, traumatic relationship to my sexuality that I was really internally homophobic. You know, I hated myself. So I ended up, having relationships with women, and I thought that that's what they were. I thought that everyone secretly was attracted to men, but just didn't admit it. And by the time I was famous, my world started to really rush toward me because I met stylists, creative people, designers, other musicians who were gay. And I realized that was my tribe.
So it's been 11 years since your last album release. And obviously it's called Homosexual. You're saying it's all about your journey to get to this point. But the word homosexual itself is like quite a clinical word, at least for myself. Why was it important for you to use this word?
It's indicative of, exactly that. I mean, for precisely that reason, I think that my journey from the shame and the internalized homophobia, that word was used as an insult for me. That word from its inception through to maybe 10 years ago was used to separate, to vilify. I think the World Health Organization only recently decided that being gay wasn't a medical condition. I think in the 20s, 30s and 40s, being quote homosexual unquote was considered to be a mental condition. When AIDS first arrived, it was considered to be a quote unquote homosexual disease, you know. So my association with that word as a 50-year-old gay man was that it was the worst possible thing you can be. So for me to put that word on an album cover in neon and to reclaim it and use that word as my own word, I'm not asking you to embrace that word at all, but I think, you know, the language of whatever we label ourselves is so constantly changing. For example, I have no problem calling myself queer, but I can tell you I've been kicked in the teeth and beaten up while someone called me queer. Now that's a word that young people absolutely embrace and we embrace. The F word, I still can't say that word. That word makes me flinch, but I know 25-year-olds will call each other that word as a term of endearment. The first person who ever called me that word was my father. You know, so my use of the word homosexual is, it's provocative intentionally, and it's my way of rewriting my trauma and my association with that word. But it's also, I was sort of, there was an attempt to erase who I was, I think, at a major label just because I was gay. You know, when I was a solo artist and making music videos, there was this fear that I looked too gay. And the second part of that song, I say, you know, if loving is a sin, you can count me in. Yes, baby, I'm a homosexual. You know, it's me using the most clinical way to describe myself to make someone feel uncomfortable about saying it. It's like, if you're going to comment on my sexuality, then I'm going to make you say it in the most clinical way.
Yeah. And having it in neon lights, it's, you know, it's almost like a celebration. And listening to the album, there were definitely celebratory moments, especially in the tone of the music, but there were also some really dark themes. I think like my favorite song that I listened to was Hey Matt. I loved that one. And especially because it goes for almost 10 minutes. Yeah. I think for like pop music, like it's not long enough. Like sometimes these tracks go for like 2 or 3 minutes and you're just like, no, we needed more. Like I think like artists like Robin and like bands like Roy Scott, when they make these really long, like amazing pop ballads where they really just let it go and have the whole song play out. There's no stone left unturned. And I really felt like that was with Hey Matt. But what is the kind of the artistic process in going through that to go, no, you know what? It's going to be 10 minutes.
I love that you pick up on that and that you can appreciate that. Part of it was, again, to go back to like the title of the record and why I wanted to do this. I felt traumatized, right? And so part of the process of making the record was that I wanted to be able to make a record that allowed me to revisit my teenage years and re-imprint my associations. So what would it have been like if I'd grown up in an era where I did feel like it was okay to be gay? And in that era, when I was listening to music, it was the era of extended mixes. It was collecting 12-inch vinyl. And a lot of those were remixes by Shep Pettibone. And I'm really dating myself here, like from like 87 to 92. These were these fantastic versions of songs that were 7, 8, 9 minutes long. And I wanted almost every track on that record to feel like that. So you had the song, and then it was allowed to just veer off into this other version. You mentioned Royksopp and Robin. One of my favorite collaborations of theirs is the song Monument, and there's two
Oh,
versions of that,
amazing
right?
song.
Incredible. And it just because you there's I had no expectation that radio would play me at all, and surprise, surprise, they haven't. And it's fine. I knew that when I made this record, I was making it for me. And I wanted to have this nostalgic tip to the extended mix. And I've done that too. Like every single or album, whatever we call it, every track that I've released from this record before I dropped the album, I released a version called the 12-inch extended mix. And I did that. You'll find 10-minute versions that aren't on the album that I also released because of that homage to that. It was to let the record breathe, and you'll find in the second half of them they become darker. So even the title track, like Homosexual, it's Homosexual Act One, is this sort of like present tense version of it. And I'm talking about the etymology of the word, and I'm saying, look, the way I feel about myself and my sexuality and the way I feel about you, it's so positive. I want to use this adjective, and I can't put it into words. It's this existential desire. It's this mix of leather and dirt. It's this mix of, in fact, the only way I can describe it is it's homosexual, right? And I'm trying to find and I can't find an adjective better than homosexual, right? And I keep talking about that. But then the song, it sort of, it segs into this thing, and I just keep repeating, it was the summer of love. It was a summer of love. It was a summer of love. And it just becomes this kind of housey, airy, synthy memory. And I'm remembering my first ever boyfriend. He was a court officer in Brooklyn, and I was 26, and it was my summer of love. I was in New York. It was in between records, and I just remember. And it was my first ever sex with men. It was just, I felt the most beautiful I ever felt. And there's no room for that in the song. There's almost no lyrics, but I got to go somewhere musically, and it sounds like a sunset. It sounds like a faded sunset, and I got to sort of go there in the song. Same thing with Hey Matt, you know, the verses were essentially kind of a suicide note. I called a friend up, he wasn't home. This is all the stuff I wanted to say to him, and he wasn't there. I wrote the song. And then later on, it just becomes this kind of mantra of like me really owning my shit. Sorry for swearing, but me basically saying I'm such a hypocrite because I'm like telling you I'm so lonely, Matt. But you know what? Every time you invite me out, I don't want to come. I don't want to be there. I'm this person that I don't know if a lot of people relate to this because of the pandemic, but it's like I'm equal parts lonely, but I'm this agoraphobe at the moment where it's like I want and I crave human interaction, but at the same time, I'm stuck at home in my misery and I can't get out of the house. And there's no room for that in a pop song. How are you going to say that in 2.5 minutes on TikTok?
You need the
So
10
that was,
minutes.
yeah, exactly. Just to do my hair.
You'll be doing a national tour, the Do You Remember tour, to celebrate the 25th anniversary of Savage Garden's debut album and your solo career. What does it feel like to make something that so many people can connect with all these years later?
I feel lucky, I think, to have just survived. I think lucky to have had any impact on sort of the zeitgeist. I think it's so hard to make a memorable song. And there was a moment at Mardi Gras when I started the song I Want You. And I'll be truthful, like I never know. Every time I perform, I'm always terrified that the audience will not be into it or boo. I don't know why, but that is a recurring nightmare of mine. And I came out on stage, and I think I started with the Animal song, and you know, people were kind of into it. But then I Want You started, and there was this immediate reaction, and I was just so grateful because that song, it sort of belongs to everyone's childhood or your parents' childhood or you know, whatever it is. There are 25-year-old kids now that their parents used to play that song on the school run, or it could be Daggy, it could be Naff, it could be whatever, but it's just a part of history, and that's kind of a lucky thing. And I think 25 years later, I call it like the embracing of the perm the way Kylie does, you know. there's this luxury, I think, of having a back catalogue where you might think you're cool, but you're not cool. You've just, you know, you've got your new record that you want to play, and I'll play some songs from that. But ultimately, there's a bunch of people that would, they just want to hear the stuff that they know. And I'm not above that. The songs don't belong to me. They belong to the zeitgeist.
Absolutely. I think that's a beautiful place to leave it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Darren Hayes, for chatting with us on All Things Queer.
Thank you.
You're listening to All Things Queer, first broadcast on RTRFM 92.1.